All right, we're back. Off yesterday, back today. It's a Friday, rolling into the weekend. You mix in the fact that we've been working at home for about 9 or 10 months, and I have no idea what day it is. And body clock completely thrown off. Everything is just different, but I know we're on the air for the next 3 hours. That's a good thing.
Did yesterday feel? Go ahead, Ol.
Did you have any conversations with your neighbor yesterday?
Yeah, I did. I was out there around 4 o'clock just checking on the whole neighborhood. You know, I'm never out there between 4 and 7 o'clock. I go up during a break and check it out to see what the boys are up to. And there were some people
going on yesterday.
There were some
with
people
eggnog and stuff.
Some loitering? Was there
some
loitering?
Yeah, there was some loitering. There was some social distance loitering going on. And I went to check it out with the kids. And, you know, the kids were playing and we were all doing our thing. And a couple of beers were had on the street. I mean, that's how you have to do it in 2020. I haven't been in anybody's house.
So but, your buddy didn't offer you an eggnog? Is that what you're saying? Because that would have been on the list.
No, it was more of just kind of a light beers and cocktails kind of scenario around 4:30 yesterday afternoon. Yeah, it was good.
I have a feeling that this neighbor would be the same neighbor if Halloween was normal. He would pull a drink wagon. Like he would have a cart with a refresher. Put it that way.
Right, handing out shots to anybody that wants to come
through. And little pick-me-up, Bailey's into the coffee, that type of stuff.
I'm not going to lie. I'd like to meet the guy. I like him.
Oh, he's a great guy. Yeah, he's a beauty. I'm lucky. You know, you never know what you're going to move into, and I have to admit, when I first moved out here, I was not Mr. Socialite or...
really? I had no idea.
Yeah. You know, it wasn't Mr. Rogers' neighborhood over here. I wasn't knocking on doors and shaking hands and kissing babies. It was kind of pulling into the garage. Garage door closes, and I do my own thing. But
that's smart. I don't
but you
that.
Know when you were doing that, the other guys are looking out their windows saying, look at this crazy person. The garage door's closing, and he doesn't want to make contact with human life. They were
sure
saying that,
while
you were doing that.
I don't mind that,
though.
I don't mind that. You don't even get out of the car until your garage is closed. And then you get out of the car so that there's no way that they could come over and stick their foot in and the garage goes back up or
anything.
There's
no contact.
And have you ever done this? And I'm going to admit to this. Have you ever pretended like you were on the phone? To avoid a conversation?
I have. To avoid the stop and chat? Like, yeah. I've done it. Many times throughout my career, but generally when I'm on the verge of a second stop and chat. So let's say someone's walking the dog and they're going around the block. First time it's a stop and chat. Then the second time you're like, we can't go through this again. So I'm going to help both of us out because I don't think either of us want to do the awkward, hey, you're still here?
Yeah, you mentioned it last week, Hazy. That's where not the earbuds, the wire with the earplugs come in so handy because as soon as you see those – you look at that, and that's an automatic, this guy's on the phone.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Or listening to something. Listening. It happened to me today. I saw my neighbor, another one of my neighbors, great guy. But I caught him out of the peripheral view, and I was out for a walk with my daughter. I had my headphones on. I was listening to music, and I just wanted to get into the house. So I kind of gave it the fake pull-out, hey, how are you routine, but then back in and kept rolling. It was smooth, man. I perfected it. But with kids, it changes everything, right? Like you move to the suburbs or you move to any neighborhood, and when you get there and it's just you or you and your wife or whatever, you're still accustomed to the lifestyle you had in a city. Like I've lived in buildings throughout the city with thousands of people in there, and I never met anybody, anybody. When I lived at Young and Eglinton, I was at one of those just albatross old buildings that have been there forever.
I know what you're talking about. I live in
never met anybody.
Right,
not one person.
Thousands of people live in my building. Thousands of cars in the underground. I don't know one person in there. I never see them. I never see another person. It's like it's weird because we're working at home now. I don't cross paths with anybody. I don't see anybody. If I have to go down to the front desk to pick up something, nobody ever there. It's a bizarre scene.
It's so bizarre because you know they're there. You know people are there. It's a massive building with hundreds of people, if not thousands of people, but I'm with you. Like, I'd be a year and a half into a place, and I'd see someone. I'm like, I've never seen that person before. Mm. Meanwhile, they look very comfortable. They didn't just move in. You know, they're doing laundry at this particular time. That is an eerie experience. When you live in a building and you've got 24-hour laundry access, and you go in there at like 2 or 3 in the morning, and there's people in there, and you're like, what are we doing down here? Because they're looking at you thinking the same thing. Why are you doing laundry at 3 in the morning? Yeah. But I used to do that just to kind of avoid the crowds. I'd go down if I was a Nighthawk or whatever, which I was when I lived alone. I'd be down there doing laundry at like 2 in the morning.
Yeah. And if you have an altercation with somebody out on the street or something, and then you realize you live at the same building.
Oh, yeah.
That's not good.
Especially if it's in the car. Like if you're honking at someone.
I had one of those.
And then all of a sudden you're in the elevator. You're like, this just happened.
I don't know if you guys have ever had that happen in your life, like an altercation. It happened to me in high school. I was the hot shot in high school, and I had this Mazda RX-7. And somebody tried to pull out on this side street, and it was one of my teachers, and I gave the bird beforehand. And then traffic stopped, and I got stopped looking right at her, and I acted like I didn't see a thing. And at school, she said, can I speak to you for a second? I don't know if that's ever – it's the most uncomfortable thing is when you have an interaction in a car, flipping somebody off, telling somebody off, and you approach the automobile, and someone you know is in it. Nothing
I've
worse.
I've never been through that.
Nothing worse.
Yeah, no. Did you pretend like you were like, hey, just joking type of thing?
And messing
just,
around. Hey, just
you know my
time.
Language. It wasn't just the bird. It was.
Yeah, there was an F-bomb.
Oh,
or two.
No. It was the worst stuff you could ever imagine. Know, and then things slow down, and I am staring dead in the face of my teacher. And it was a horror show.
It's
horror
the worst, show. Though. Like, everyone is a tough guy in their car, myself included, right? Like, you just – there's a great – Louis C.K. did a great bit on this back when Louis was still, not canceled.
Before he had his stuff,
Yeah, basically. And he did a bit on what people would say when they're in their cars that you would never say in any other situation in life. You know, like wishing death upon people and double fingers and every swear word you know. You wouldn't say that if someone cut you off walking into the elevator, but you do on the road, man. Everyone's got a mood. Everyone's got an attitude. And anyway, long story short, where this all started, now that I've got kids and all the kids around town interact, and I'm right in there, man. I'm a man of the people. I feel like I'm
– Love it.
I'm a part of the community now. So I guess there's no going back. Wouldn't it be crazy if all of a sudden I just said, you know what, I'm not doing this anymore, and cut off all social like interaction between my neighbors and just said, no, sorry, I've decided I'm not going to do that anymore.
Don't think that's crazy, because stuff goes on in neighborhoods. People just, they're on their own routine, and crazier things have happened.
Yeah,
like,
but if you...
And write us at HayesTSN if you've had an experience with a neighbor that is completely over the top, weird, weirded you out, just stopped communication, anything, we would like to know about it.
Yeah. I mean, I had a neighbor that I rented. He bought 5 houses on the block. This is when I played in St. Louis. So he bought 5 houses on the block. He lived in one, and then I rented one. And I asked him for a bit of a discount. I was like, you know what, if I prepay you the rent for the whole year, can, you know, would you cut me a deal? He's like, No, I'm on a budget for these. And I said, no problem, that's fine. But he goes, I'm going to hit you up for tickets. And I go, no, you're not.
Like, yeah, absolutely not. It's
I'll
funny
never
you
forget
ask that,
this.
But no, that's never going to happen.
Yeah, and
the,
I'm sleeping
the
one
stones
time.
On that guy, unbelievable.
He literally was like, I'm not going to, you know, no discounts at all. But you know what? Once in a while, I'm going to hit you up for tickets. And I said, just so we know, you're never going to get tickets from me. I said, just so we're clear, you're never going to get tickets from me.
Right.
Because, you know, if this is a business transaction, no problem. I understand. There's no discounts. We're neighbors. It's fine. But you're my landlord, and you've chosen to, you know, hold tight on the rent, which is fine. And it's your prerogative, and I respect that. But don't think you're coming next door when, at that time, I was playing for St. Louis. Detroit was our big rival. And I remember renting from him. He's like, I'm a huge Red Wings fan. He's like, maybe I can hit you up for tickets. And I thought originally maybe there would be a little give and take and stuff. But the guy, the stones on this guy, one time
that
we were playing
incredible.
Detroit, he came during my afternoon nap. I'm hearing a knock at the door. He's like, do you think I can get 2 for tonight? And I said, no. Like, we discussed this back in September. It's not happening.
Dude, people had no idea. No idea. I was skating around with Mary. I'm staring at Mario Lemieux in warm-up. Our team services guy is on the bench. He calls me over, and he goes, Gary Roberts' buddy's up top, and he said you might leave him tickets one time. Are you? I go, what? He goes, yeah, Gary Rob's his buddy's upstairs. He said, you know, he liked the Penguins one time. You might leave him tickets. I go, well, it's not today. So tell him. I was flabbergasted.
Yeah,
I said,
it's kind of weird how
many. I said,
how
you can never interrupt me during. No understanding.
No understanding said, of the inner workings of getting tickets, having access to tickets. But I think it's just something that we all do in different ways. I mean, I'm sure we're all guilty of asking for things or doing certain things where it's like that person walks away and goes, what the hell was that? Like, why would he think I could just obviously get him in somewhere or obviously do this or do that? But with tickets, I mean, I guess the assumption is you could just always get them because you play, and that means you own the building. It means you own access to any possible two-pack of tickets you can possibly get or want.
But any ticket anywhere, that's the crazy part. I'll get a phone call sometimes and be like, yeah, my friends are going to be in, you know, name a city, like a team that I've never played for.
Yeah, Denver.
Like, you think you can get them four
Colorado's
tickets?
Colorado's playing
LA tonight. I think you're pulling a four-pack out of your ass. And
saying, I'm like, what do you mean? Like,
I'll text them to you.
Well, can you go get my buddy four tickets? You're right, Colorado, LA. Neither organization I've played for, but you know somebody can get a call there and get four tickets. Oh, and by the way, the game's in 2 hours. There's
the
other
thing
right
now. They just decided they might want to go.
Yeah,
I think you could find a way to make
and
that
and
work.
They realized that the tickets were $180 each or whatever it is, and thought, you know what, I know somebody who played in the NHL once, you know, or back 10 years ago, and let's get four tickets off of him because he can make a phone call. It's crazy. Like,
yeah,
people
do
that.
It's just something you don't even put thought into. And again, I don't know what I am guilty of, but I know I am guilty of certain things. Or I'm sure I have asked or just assumed something over the years where it's like, why would you possibly assume that? You know, like, why would you? And I guess it's just a part of the program. And it's just how we all operate. And, you know, you guys look at it from a sports perspective, but they're – could be with golf. We're like, yeah, we'll just come out and play there. It's like, no, you won't. What do you mean you'll just come out and play there? And we just assume that we can get in.
Well,
or whatever the situation might be. I can't think of any on the fly.
I can't imagine.
Because I'm guilty of them.
But think of the people that have played at the Masters. And people like, can you get me on that course? You guys did that recently. But that was
with Sam Mitchell. I mean, Sam didn't play on tour, and he didn't play in the Masters. But you're right. Yeah, exactly. And why would Sam possibly hook us up? We called each other right after the show. We're like, there's no way Sam's going to hook us up. Why would he hook the two of us up?
He just mentioned on the show that he golfs with eight guys or seven guys every day. And he's going to hook me and Hayes up before the seven guys he tees it up with every day in Georgia.
There's our example right there. Sam probably got off the phone and said, are those two idiots even?
Yeah, they're high.
Like, how gutless and ignorant for you to ask me to get you on Augusta National.
But he's the one that brought it on. We were casually like, hey, hook up Augusta. Yeah. He's like, yeah, I'll do it. I'll do it. And we're like,
yeah, now we got
to
hold it.
I kind of was a little bit turned on after the show because I was like, you never know.
We're going.
Maybe
we're
he's
really going
on
there.
The thing is, a guy like Sam probably would come through with it. But how about a random person to be who Sam met, or a random person that, you know, name a guy on tour that he meets at a grocery store and they run it. Oh, hey, you know what? Can you get me on Augusta? Or can you get me Tiger Woods' driver? That's the best part.
Yeah,
you know
those
many
are
people,
great requests.
You know many people know because I'm friends with Aginla, for example. Hey, can you get Jerome to sign this? Like, all of a sudden, I'm an autograph seeker?
No.
Like, it's
ridiculous.
No
way. I'm not doing any of that. I always say, like, you know, we talk about calling this guy. There's just some people where it's, like, not happening. No way. Well, Hazy, how do you rate what you watched on television yesterday for your American
two of the worst games of the year. I really lost interest, to be honest with you, down the stretch. They were as awful of football game. That was 2020. In a nutshell, that you can't even
hook people
up.
What the Dallas Cowboys pulled was 2020. That nonsense was garbage.
They are an abysmal team, and McCarthy's an awful coach for that team.
Dude, what?
You know, maybe he's a good coach somewhere else. Yeah, it's not going to be because that team is awful, and they're terrible, and they're still technically in the running. He's not going anywhere. Coaches don't get fired during the year. It's not going to happen. But he clearly has no control over that team. He has no ability to make an adjustment on the fly, to motivate. I don't know what the problem is. Like the biggest issue, and I've said this for years, is not McCarthy, is not the 53-man roster. It's the man at the top. Jerry Jones is an absolute disaster. And Cowboy fans, I don't think, quite understand that or are not willing to accept it, probably because it's like Stockholm Syndrome in a way. You know, like, he's the guy, there's nothing you can do about it, so I guess I just have to hope that it's going to work out.
Okay,
you know, because he owns the team and he runs the team.
He was the same guy at the beginning of the season where Marcellus Wiley and different NFL people, forgetting about the fans, saying this is the most talented roster they've ever put on the field, and I know there were some injuries early on. The injuries have continued to pile up. But these are the same people that was drooling about this roster saying, I have them as Super Bowl contenders. So what happened after that?
Well, for starters, Dak Prescott went down, I mean, which is clearly right. A massive issue. I think what was being thought of was that it was the most talented offense they've put together. The defense was always going to have to be a patchwork situation. You know, it just was. And you have an offense where you have all these flashy toys with Amari Cooper, and you draft CeeDee Lamb, and you've got Ezekiel Elliott. Zeke is a mess also.
He's,
I mean, what did he have, 31 yards or something rushing last night?
Dude, ever since he signed that contract, I'm telling you, he is mailing it in, and he's a fraud out there right
he
now.
He looks awful. He looks like he's got no interest. He looks like he got paid, and now he knows he's got his money, and quite frankly, he doesn't really care about his legacy. I hope that's not the issue for him. And if you're a Cowboy fan, you better hope that that's not the issue, because he's got too much guaranteed money. He's not going anywhere. But it's another example of Jerry Jones got hoodwinked. You know, Jerry Jones, Zeke did his I'm in Cowboy and I'm not showing up until I get paid. And eventually Jones paid him.
Yeah.
And he paid the wrong guy. Like, Dak is the real deal and couldn't find out a way to make that contract work. But Ezekiel Elliott, who's a running back, a luxury position, you paid. And now you got to pay the price. Like, it always comes back to Jerry Jones. Who hired Mike McCarthy?
Yeah.
Jerry Jones. Who drafted a wideout when you didn't need one with CeeDee Lamb in the first round? Jerry Jones.
I'll tell you what Jerry Jones didn't do, though, is call that fake punt.
That's fine. That's brutal. I get it. But that's an isolated play. I mean, and they were done and the game was over. And I hear you. It's a terrible play call. Terrible. It's an inexcusable play call. But it comes back to Jones.
It is. And he's not going to fire himself because he owns a team. He's worth billions of dollars. Do you think that he gave the get your damn act together to Mike McCarthy after that?
Get your damn act together.
Probably not, Noodles, because he hired him.
Yeah, you know, you're right. Like that, you got to stand by him, right?
Yeah, like it's you made the hiring. You know, what are you going to do, goof on this guy? Now, I don't know if McCarthy's going to come back next year.
You could fire up a scotch in a private moment and say, can you explain that to me, please? Like, can you just explain that one to me, if you don't mind, so I know, like, kind of what was going through your head? In a private moment, you want to know what the hell was going on there.
And didn't he double down and say, like, I was fine with the
said
call?
It was like a good play call or a great play call, or I don't remember how he phrased it, but he tried to defend himself, basically, because that's what he's going to do. I mean, he's a proud guy. McCarthy's got a Super Bowl ring. He's been around, and now he's a part of the circus. But it's a circus in Dallas, and that's what it is. You get dragged into the mud, and McCarthy has gotten dragged into the mud. And I can't defend him as a coach. It hasn't worked for him. It's looked ugly. It has been ugly. But he wasn't this big of a debacle in Green Bay. So
what's
the difference?
Well, the team, like you said, the circus, the atmosphere, the whole, like, he basically went, you know, could you compare, and very softly, you know, Babcock had this success in Detroit, a lot quieter market. And then Babcock came to Toronto, the epicenter. That's what the Dallas Cowboys are
for
baseball, right? The epicenter?
Yeah, it's as big as it gets. Now, Green Bay is a small market, quite literally, but a massively public team in terms of what people
correct.
You know,
like Green Bay, the cheeseheads,
and
you're right. Like Detroit, the Red Wings didn't have that.
But
it's a difference in marketplaces as far as, and the success hasn't been there. I mean, the Cowboys are a mess. And now the Leafs weren't a mess when Babcock came. Well, they
Yeah, they were, but he turned it around in the league.
But what I mean is, I hear what you're saying,
but I don't think that's the issue. I don't think Mike McCarthy is wilting to the pressure of the market. I mean, I can't speak for the market because I'm not down there. I don't know.
Right.
I'm sure he's not overly loved right now. I'm sure he's going to get run out of town, and he might fall victim to that. But it's not like Mike McCarthy is some nobody or some kid, and it's his first crack at it.
Right.
He was in Green Bay for a long time, and had success. Peter King, our NFL insider, will join us. We'll get his take on this. Forget McCarthy. I don't see how Matt Patricia is going to coach again in Detroit. He likely will for the rest of the year, but there is no way you can bring him back. That team is lifeless. They look as awful as they have since that 0-16 season. They look horrendous. They look like they've just got nothing going for them.
It's garbage.
Yeah,
so Peter King will join us. We'll get into this report in the Globe and Mail about the Rogers Center and maybe the end of the era with the dome downtown, and might it move to the waterfront, or could they build a new stadium down at the waterfront? Get into that. Single game betting apparently is coming to Canada as well. Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that. And race coming up. Scott Salmon from Hockey Canada as well will join us, where the juniors are basically on lockdown. They're dealing with a 14-day quarantine.
Yeah.
Will not be on the ice, so we'll catch up with Scott into the 6 p.m. hour on that. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Ray Ferraro coming up just after 5. We'll get into this story in the Globe about potential changes with the Rogers Center and whether or not it's even possible moving forward now that COVID has hit and COVID may have claimed another victim in the form of a new stadium here in Toronto. But we'll get to that a little bit later in the hour. We just completely dismantled the Dallas Cowboys and talked about how awful they are, how embarrassing this effort was yesterday. And everyone's got a different viewpoint. Is it the coach? Is it the 53-man roster? Personally, I think it's the owner. I think it always comes back to Jerry Jones. To get you an answer on that from someone much more informed than we are, here is our NFL insider from NBC, Peter King. I'm sure you're pointing fingers at the Cowboys like everyone else, Peter, but is there one person in particular that gets the finger point from you?
No, I don't think there's one. I think that at the risk of not saying something you're going to love, I'm going to say two things. One, this was a defense that was going to take a while to get to play well. And because the scheme is very complicated, they did not have an off-season program. They began practicing about August 1st, and they had to play a game 6 weeks later, and they looked like it. You know, they didn't know what they were doing for the most part on defense. That's the first part of it. But now that you're a little bit later in the season, they're playing better on defense. And that's bizarre to say after they gave up 41 to Washington, but that was a 20-16 game that never should have been 41 to whatever it was, 16, whatever, however it ended. And it ended that way because of a terrible, terrible decision by the Cowboys to on 4th and 10, deep in their own territory, deep 24-yard line, when everybody in the world, for those of you in the listening audience who don't know the Dallas Cowboys coaching staff that well, they have a special teams coach named John Fossil on there. He's the son of the former New York Giants Super Bowl coach, Jim Fossil. And John Fossil is known in the NFL for trying a fake something or a weird special teams play in every game. So when Washington comes into this game, they know that no matter what the play is, they're, you know, a special teams play, kicking game play, they're watching for the onside kick, they're watching for the fake punt, everything. Even on 4th and 10 from their own 24, they decide to do the fake punt. Mike McCarthy okays it, and you don't fake punt when everyone in the stadium or and everyone on the other sideline is looking for a fake anyway, and you're at your own 24-yard line. You need 10 yards. It's an absolutely terrible call. So at that time, it was 20-16, and then the route was on. with like whatever 12 minutes left in the game. Anyway, my only point is that the combination of taking a long time to learn the defense and losing Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott playing terrible.
Awful. Man,
football.
Is he awful.
Awful. Awful. And not only fumbling losing five fumbles, he lost two all of last year, losing five fumbles in 11 games, one at a hugely inopportune time yesterday. I mean, you know, Ezekiel Elliott, to me, is not taking nearly enough blame for what's happened this year with this team. But I would say,
what the hell's wrong with him, Peter? Like, he just – what the hell is going on with him?
Well, I'll tell you, the biggest – what Cowboy apologists and what Ezekiel Elliott apologists will say is that their offensive line is in huge trouble, and they got all these new guys. Absolutely, unequivocally right. Their offensive line is poor now and porous, but when you are a franchise running back and they're paying them whatever it is, $20 million a year, whatever, $18 million a year, your job is to lift the team when the team needs to be lifted. And he's done absolute zero of that all season. And he needs to take more blame in this, in my opinion.
Shifting to Detroit, what do you make of that circus there? I mean, Matt Patricia, I don't think there's a pencil that can go over his ear big enough to fix what's going on. It's just, it's a mess. I feel bad that they have to be on Thanksgiving every year because they're so bad. And I actually, I don't know if you agree with it or not, Stafford, I kind of feel for that guy because I think he's a talented quarterback. And I think if you put him at a program where just things were, I don't know, better, maybe he had to have a chance to have success.
Well, in my opinion, I disagree with you a little bit on Matthew Stafford. He's been the quarterback of, he was drafted after they go 0-16. And he's been the quarterback of this team for 12 years. And he played three games one year. He got hurt. But most of the rest of the time, he's been the quarterback every year through the season. And the Lions have not only not won a playoff game in that entire time he's been there, but they haven't hosted one. They haven't won a division since he's been there. And in my opinion, I think, like yesterday, I heard either Tony Romo or Jim Nantz on the telecast call him underrated, and I wanted to throw up. I mean,
I just think he's talented. I guess I'll just leave it at that. I think he's talented. He's got a hose. He can throw it.
I think he's very talented. But at some point, he's got to take a little bit of the blame. He threw, you know, in their 5-day ridiculous run, where they get shut out by a mediocre Carolina team with a quarterback starting his first game in the NFL. Lions get shut out on Sunday in Charlotte. Then they come back and have a horrible performance against a 3-win team from Houston. And in those two games, those 8 quarters, the first 7.5 quarters, your franchise quarterback throws 0 touchdown passes. I mean, you know, you've got to I understand that it's a bit of a zoo. There's some mayhem going on. I get it. And I'm not throwing him under the bus or saying he's awful. All I'm saying is let's not absolve him of blame here either, even though, look, Matt Patricia is going to go. Probably the GM, Bob Quinn, is going to go as well. And the Lions have got to blow it up. The question now is, question I would ask is, Matthew Stafford next year is exactly 20% of their salary cap, 20% of the Lions' salary cap. So the question is the new GM, new coach, assuming that there's both, are they going to keep him? And I think it's a logical question to ask. Maybe they decide that they're going to trade him, and or the new regime is going to trade him, get whatever they can for him, and start anew, because Stafford is, this will be the third straight year that the Matthew Stafford-led Lions, as well as the Patricia-led Lions, finish in fourth place in their division. I mean, it's Groundhog Day.
Oh, it's awful. Yeah. And, I mean, it's been going on my whole life. It really, It's been happening forever. The Detroit Lions are just a complete afterthought.
Can I just say one last thing? It's like I was thinking about this yesterday, watching this game where they're getting their heads handed to them in the fourth quarter. And, you know, Thanksgiving has always been a big day in my family's life, you know, big family gatherings except for this year. And I remember when I was a kid, I was 10 or 11 years old, sitting around watching Detroit lose to somebody 900-0. And I remember asking my father, why are the Lions on TV every Thanksgiving? Right. Why can't we see some other team? And I mean, I'm serious. That was 50 years ago.
Yep. It's just constant. And every kid, every 10-year-old in America or throughout the world, for that matter, asked the same question yesterday. Why are we still subjected to this garbage? But I guess they started the whole trend, and they're sticking to it, and that's fine. But what was a bummer was the game we all wanted to see play obviously got postponed, and that was Ravens taking on the Steelers. And now that has been pushed back to Tuesday, which means next Thursday when the Ravens were supposed to play the Cowboys, clearly won't happen either. But Lamar Jackson testing positive is obviously quite significant. I mean, this is the first quarterback that I can recall testing positive, let alone a superstar on a team that is a loss or two away from maybe throwing away their season. What do you think their mood is like in Baltimore?
Cam Newton, too.
That's right, Cam. Cam earlier in the year. That's right. But
I would, you know, there's a couple of things I think to understand here. Number one is I wrote this in my column last May. And I just went and looked it up today, and I basically said, people need to get ready. This is going to be an unfair season. I called it a holy, W-H-O-L-L-Y, unfair season. That's what it's going to be. Somebody's ox is going to get gored. And right now, when you look at it, think of how the Pittsburgh Steelers are getting messed with now, okay? First of all, they had a bunch of players. I talked to Juju Smith-Schuster this week. He was fired up about playing the primetime game on Thanksgiving night. So they're not going to play that. And then they keep getting the game moved back, all right? And now they play on Tuesday. And then they have a short week to come back and play Washington, which has become a really physical, punishing defensive team to play. And Washington now is going to have 10 days to prepare for that game and to rest because they played yesterday. So they've got 10 days to go. The Steelers only have 5 in between their most physical rivalry game against the Ravens, and then they have to prepare to play Washington. So the Steelers, I'll tell you what, if the Steelers go 16-0 this year, man, my hat's off to them.
Absolutely. That's a very valid point, and it feels like it's a possibility at this point. Always great catching up with you, Peter. Happy Thanksgiving again. We'll do it again next week.
Thanks a lot, guys. Take care.
There's Peter King from NBC. Yeah, I mean, that is something that we all have to accept and embrace, and I think we have. I think you're kind of preaching to the choir. People get it. In the moment, you get emotional or you get fed up or whatever, like, why isn't my team playing or why isn't this happening? But once you take a step back, you let it breathe, you're like, okay, I get it. You know, like COVID is, it's running rampant in the NFL right now. Like, I just trying
think
to
about, think about what's going to go on the next 10 days after Thanksgiving, Christmas coming up. It'll be a gong show.
Yeah, and you look at the Ravens, have basically, they're shut down. The Rams, I believe, shut down their facility today. The Browns have not been in. The Jags are not in. The Niners are dealing with issues. The Broncos, I believe, are dealing with issues. Wow. Like, all of those are only the teams that I could find on the fly.
You know what's
next?
That are
dealing with COVID.
You know what's next? Basketball and then hockey. Because they're going to have to deal with it, too. They're sitting on the sidelines going, okay, we're watching these teams have to go through this. These leagues have to go through it. And, you know, unfortunately, it's the NFL's having to deal with it right now. And it's everywhere.
Yeah. And you knew it was coming, right? Like, it's not like we weren't aware of what was coming and you make adjustments. But now the schedule is starting to run out.
If you're not in a bubble, this is going to happen, period.
Yeah, it's going to happen until probably this time next year, basically. When if there's vaccines and all that and treatment and all that, then we get back to normal and you're not going to deal with it the same way. But for the foreseeable future, it's going to be a part of it. Look at the junior camp. Like, yeah. Canada's just not – they're shut down. They're in lockdown, basically. They're not going on the ice. They're not playing nothing.
Yeah, I know.
Because of a couple of cases. So we'll tell you more about that later in the afternoon. Rays coming up in 25 minutes. We'll touch on potentially the end of an era. What's going to happen with the Dome downtown? Do you want to see it basically get demolished and then replaced on the spot? Maybe move to the lakeshore? A couple of options for a new ballpark into the future. We'll get into that next. All right, Rays coming up in about 20 minutes. Big story in the Globe and Mail today, front page coverage. You don't see that too often with COVID doing what it's doing and vaccines. I mean, everyone's wondering about the vaccines and when they're going to get up here. And you had to have a pretty big scoop to push different storylines off the front page, but that's exactly what happened today with some news that Rogers and the Blue Jays and I guess the city and the province and the country, where they'd all have to kind of work on this together, might be looking at building a new baseball stadium.
It now, should.
Well, yeah, there's a lot to unpack here. We should point out that Rogers Communication and Rogers, the company, the family, they issued a statement earlier today basically saying these were things we were looking into and talking about prior to COVID. So COVID may have put this to bed. I don't think permanently. I think once you've made the decision that you feel like you need a new park or it would make sense to make a new park or build a new park, you're probably going to get there again, right? Like you've made that conclusion that you can make more money by building a new park, and it always comes back to making money. But as much as the report did indicate, and there's no reason to dispute this, that it would be privately funded, I think it has to be privately funded now because our government has been spending so much money, understandably so, based on COVID and propping people up as they are supposed to do.
They're not diving in for a ballpark right now.
Yeah, the idea of pitching in taxpayer money on a ballpark right now for a private entity and enterprise that has a lot of money on their own probably isn't going to fly.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
No.
But they do need a – I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I think they need a new ballpark. Like, that's an old building.
Jamie.
It's run down. I don't want to use the word dump, but it's not a great –
I don't think it's a dump. It's just it's amazing how quickly it's outdated. That place went from being state-of-the-art dome, opens, closes, weather, and now it's a dinosaur, and it's a big, giant piece of cement. But I will say this. I don't think – ripping that down and building right there is possibly the – I think you got to go somewhere else because I played in a pro sports organization where it's like, get traded to the Carolina Hurricanes, but you're actually playing in Greensboro in a dump.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a couple years transition, and it's a mess for the organization. So if you go somewhere else, that allows you to play in the dome until that particular ballpark is ready – as opposed to saying, oh, yeah, you want to come and play for the Jays? We're a team that's really on the rise right now. But, by the way, this year, this might
and
be a
Hamilton.
Year, but we're going to be playing down in Guelph.
Yeah, but you got you can't do that. Like,
we're at Christie Pitts this year, and we're going to fire up the you know what I'm saying, Brian?
Yeah, no, I know that. Yeah. I don't know. You're right. I mean, we've all been to Yankee Stadium. I'm assuming we have, the new Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
And because it was in the Bronx and there was real estate that they could buy – they were building it next door, right?
Right.
But that is not possible downtown based on the structures and based on the lack of real estate. Like, if you can't just build next door to the Rogers
Center. You can't take a Sawzall to a condo building and rip it down.
Right. I don't see how it's logistically possible. And I mean, maybe if there's an engineer out there or there's something we don't know, I would love to be informed on that. But I don't see how that's a possibility to build right beside it while you continue to play in the dome. I'm with you. I think you'd have to demolish it, start from scratch, and play somewhere else for 5 or 6 years or whatever it's going to take.
You can't do what the Phoenix Coyotes did, where they were in Scottsdale, and then they built a rink way the hell out of town, and now nobody goes.
They're not doing that, though. It sounds like the other option is down on the water. Yeah. It's you build – you either – and I understand why they would want to stay where they are, because it is a primary location. It's right downtown. You're close to Union Station. Mm-hmm. Right? There's a lot of people that take the TTC or take the GO train down, and you get off, you walk. We've all done it. I've done it thousands of times. And I don't know how logistically it would work in terms of transit if you put it down by the waterfront. You know, I think the scenery would be incredible, although it's pretty amazing, you know, seeing the CN Tower while you're sitting there watching a ball game.
It is.
Right? Like,
but
the city landscape is pretty amazing.
But you can also sit into a place out near Cabana there, the docks, and look and see the CN Tower, too.
You can, yep.
I think that would be awesome.
BMO Field about that.
Yeah, hit a home run into Lake Ontario. That would be so cool.
It would be.
I think it would be, too. And I think there's a number of reasons why I think this became so outdated so quickly. And it's in large part because we have the ability to see so many different parks around baseball, right? Like, there's so many unique parks around baseball, where hockey and basketball, every stadium's basically the same.
Cookie cutter.
Right? Noodles, you've been in every single one. Like, there's subtle differences, and there's a couple that are nicer than others, and a couple that have a few thousand more seats than others, but they're basically the same.
Yep.
Not the case in baseball. Like, you could go on a trip and see 10 completely different parks, and as a result, it makes yours look so much worse and feel so much worse if it is on the lower end of the totem pole, which is what the Dome is. You know, the Rogers Center, it is closer to the Trop than it is to PNC Park in Pittsburgh.
Right. How old is it? Like, is it
89.
Yeah.
It opened in 89, so do the math.
30 years old.
Yeah, 30 years old. 31 years old. And when it opened, it was like a phenomenon around the world.
Unreal.
You know, the retractable roof, and I have heard from people that have come here from different parts of the world that still marvel at the Rogers Center.
I kind of still do when I walk in it. I still think it's an awesome place, and I can't believe that people look at it as some big, giant piece of cement. I'll never forget walking into it, thinking how amazing it was. The big TV in outfield, it was amazing. I cannot believe that 30 years later, that is just the dinosaur of Major League Baseball right now. It's incredible.
But
life changes. We all used to have – I used to have a giant 80-inch tube TV in my basement.
Like
you know what I mean? Like, one of the best you could get. You imagine trying to roll – it took six people to get it into my basement. Six firefighters carried it in there. Monster men. Nowadays, you know, it's just technology. Everything's changed. Like, it's no fault of its own. Like, I think they've done a good job of upkeeping it. And, you know, we went to games recently, two summers ago. It's still a great place, great atmosphere. But they need an upgrade, either an upgrade or a new building.
Yes.
They have to decide.
And I think it's got to be ultimately a new building. There's only so much you could do, right? It's artificial turf. It's another thing that has always kind of held them back, is that the other parks around baseball outside of the Trop have natural grass, and players want to play on natural grass. Also, the view is just, it looks more natural. I mean, it goes without saying. But we're talking years down the road. I don't know how COVID is going to affect the game plan, but it ultimately comes back to money. I mean, it's a business transaction, and clearly the Blue Jays and Rogers have decided, or have had somebody present them with something that would suggest they will make all their money back, plus with a better park and a new park, and I think a more intimate park. I think a big issue with the Jays is, outside of when they are rocking, which has not happened a lot over the past 25 years, it's empty in there, right?
Yeah.
And if there's 25,000 people in a stadium that's supposed to hold 50, as
you
opposed
to
25% or 25,000 in a stadium that's supposed to hold 38, it is so much more noticeable.
Dude, that
right.
place was hopping a few years ago, though, when they had that was the place to be on Friday or Saturday night in the city of Toronto. No bars.
Oh.
Like, going to a Jays game was the place to be.
Yeah, it was, when they were a great team into September and into, you know, them making the ALCS. And then it rolled over. In 16, after they had hit their jackpot, they were huge. And you're right. Throughout the year, they sold a ton of tickets. But I think at the time, with the popularity of the Jays and the engineering and everything that they put into it, they made it a 50,000 seat capacity, which made sense because they were selling out, and they brought in 4 million plus people year after year in the early 90s. That's just not doable anymore, and I don't think you want it like that anymore. You know, you want it to be a hot ticket. So if you build one that's 35,000 people or 40,000 people, all of a sudden, you're probably going to charge more money for tickets because it becomes more difficult to even get your hands on them, right? That's a part of, I'm sure, the thought process as well.
I've seen some great concerts there. Bruce Springsteen, like, there's have the Stones played there? Did you see
the Stones, I believe, have played the Rogers Center. Yeah, I don't think I saw them at the Dome. But yeah, every massive act has rolled through and played at the Rogers Center.
Impressive. Jamie, but Ryan wouldn't be quite familiar with the nuances of the dome. He wouldn't know that.
Yeah, just the players only, I guess.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Only you guys.
Was that
know
Gino
that.
Said that to
Gino
you.
In the Gardens. All right, we'll come back in and pick up on this a little bit more. Where we'd prefer to see it, what we'd want to see out of a new stadium if and when it happens. And Ray Ferraro coming up in the next hour. Richard Petty will join us as well. He's been through all this. He knows what has to go into building a new stadium and getting the basically the go-ahead and the green light from government. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.